Hey, uplifters. I want to take a minute to talk about something personal to me. In my 40s, I started noticing my hair was shedding more. So a couple of months ago, I started using Nutrafol. I'm already seeing so much less shedding. And my teenage daughter, who notices absolutely everything, keeps commenting on how thick my hair looks. As someone who's built my career around rigorous science, I super love that Nutrafol was the first brand to clinically study hair thinning on menopausal women, which is why I am so proud to have them as a sponsor. Nutrafol takes a whole body approach to hair health, supporting you throughout your life stages. You can see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code UPLIFTERS. I am beaming ear to ear. You can see that over on YouTube because I am in the same virtual space as Elena Brower, somebody I have admired for so long. Elena, if you don't know her, is a pretty legendary yoga teacher. But more than that, she is a mom. She's a mentor to so many. She is a poet. She's an artist. She is the host of the Practice You podcast. Her first book was Art of Attention. Since then, she's also published a collection of poetry called Softening Time. And now her latest book, Hold Nothing, which is what we're going to talk mostly about today. Because in this time, so many of us, and I mean this time sort of at a global level, but I also mean for those of us who identify as women in midlife, we can feel like we are holding so much. And I often describe women in midlife as juggling 50 plates simultaneously while trying to balance 14 hats on their heads and then cursing themselves the second they drop one or one of them lands, God forbid, in the way they didn't hope or expect. And so this idea of holding nothing seems maybe too radical. I'd go for holding less for most of us at this point.
That's actually where I am right now. I'm going to hold a little less.
A little less. A little less. Just turn down the volume, a few fewer hats, fewer plates. And I can't think of anyone that I would be more excited to have this conversation with than you. Elena and I met a couple lifetimes ago. And I had the great joy when I was working at Weight Watchers to work on one of the most meaningful projects of my career, which was to bring a holistic well-being methodology to the weight journey that so many women were on with Weight Watchers. And Elena came in to voice some of the reflections that we had designed. And it was a turning up of a vision. And for those of us who are making something, especially something that's kind of scary to us, it's full of uncertainty, it feels brave. The scariest part of it oftentimes is co-creating with other people because it feels like there is a risk to the creation to hand it off. And yet, the collaboration with you is an illustration of why we benefit from co-creation. We had poured our love into it, but it took your voice, giving it life, to take it to its next level.
How did it go in the end? I never really got to follow up.
We were ahead of our time.
Oh, interesting.
So much of what we were offering felt way too radical. That said, it was a massive success.
Good.
Because while it did not become a huge commercial offering at that time, I think it built the road for some big commercial offerings. But more than that, for me personally, it was life-changing. Because I began to connect with women who helped me see beyond my own reality to a new possible future. And helped me see that life didn't have to be just climbing a corporate ladder. And life, like that, there were other measures of success and there were other ways of living. And you were certainly one of those women who influenced my journey, my path, and my choices today. So thank you.
God, I'm so happy to hear you say this, and gosh, what a blessing it is that we get to come together in ways that have meaning for us as well as many other, you know, women.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's the whole point of the show, is to bring women together to share our relationship with courage and fear, to explore what it means to do big, brave things in the second half of our lives, and to rise together. And that is so much of what I learned in that era. So it's just, it's a new format for the lessons I began learning there. But given that it's been a couple lifetimes, your first sort of public facing lifetime was a yoga teacher in New York City. Since then, I feel like you've been down some new expansive roads. So how would you define these last couple of chapters?
One is creating art, painting, finally, which gives me so much joy. In New York, I couldn't do that because there wasn't the space. But now I can make bigger work. And
do you mean that physically or?
Both.
Physically and
kind of energetically.
Yeah.
Like keeping up with an elementary school schedule for my son. Now this is 6 years later. He's now in his second year of college.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's very fun. Fun also to walk around the house naked again.
Yeah, that's a cool thought.
Pretty great.
I'm writing that down now on my list of advantages.
It's a good one.
To this scary thing of saying farewell to my kids as they go to college, but also to the list of advantages of aging.
Yeah. How old are they?
There are more opportunities to walk around naked. 17 and 14. So I've got a couple years with one of them, but we're in our last year with the 17-year-olds. Yeah.
Well, that's one great advantage. There are a few. I don't have to put so much of my thought there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's kind of a freeing. We'll talk when they leave.
Thank you.
Happy to be there for you. Please reach out.
Thank you. I'm going to need lots of mother mentors in that phase, I think.
Yeah. What I found, I began sort of grieving and facing it many months before. Mm-hmm. And because I did that when it happened, I was able to be like very present and write about it. There's a nice one on my Substack called Two More Weeks.
Oh,
so beautiful. And I really like that piece, actually. Proud of that. And it was nice to just be able to be present in a deep way.
Sounds like you'd readied yourself for it.
Yeah. It's a good plan to always get a little ready. And then, what are some of the other directions? I guess chaplaincy and Zen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I moved here in 2020, I found Upaya Zen Center, started studying online because they were closed for the pandemic. But, you know, I'm very much a Zen student and now a candidate for chaplaincy, although I don't know that I'll go all the way to becoming a formal accredited chaplain. But I'm really glad I've done these two very intense years of study and volunteering to be prepared for that if I do want to follow that path. The volunteering I will continue for as long as I'm alive. I really enjoy it. And the practice has given me a lot of peace in my body and in my mind, a very trustworthy being. And that I didn't have before. Yeah. And aside from that, more just strength training. My body strength, training my mind strength overall, and more kind of feeding precisely what I want to feed rather than the schedule of New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fewer commitments, more margins with which to choose.
Totally.
Yeah. How long have you been in Santa Fe?
For 5.5 years now.
Does it feel like home?
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like art and Santa Fe are merged?
It's so funny because I didn't realize what a haven for art this place actually is. Such a priority, even in the commerce of this town, which is not a big town.
Mm.
Canyon Road is dedicated mostly to art. I had no idea about that at the time, but when we finally walked Canyon Road, it was many months after we moved here because of COVID. We were just like in our own little bubbles. But we did a lot of hiking and when I got to Canyon Road, I was like, oh my God, this place is an art mecca. I didn't actually know that. And then I started to really paint. And James, bless him, my partner, he always comes back when he goes shopping for supplies of any kind, really. He comes back with a canvas.
Ah.
And now I have a gallery here that is, she features my art maybe once or twice a year, very generously, and has sold some pieces. And I sell my prints online, which is very sweet. Yeah, I'm just very thankful to be creating in general.
Is this opportunity to invest your energy and your time where you choose, as opposed to where maybe you feel expected or obligated? How is that linked to your relationship to aging?
Recently, I'm realizing that getting older has to be about slowing down, not because there's some lack of physical capacity, but because if I don't slow down, life just gets more and more truncated and hasty. What I'm finding is I feel like I have longer days when I move more slowly. It's so, so paradoxical. But one of my friends, one of my very wise friends, I'm going to buy this book recently, The Waste Books by Georg Lichtenberg.
Mm.
And I was in the tub and I found this morning. Page 31 from Notebook C. It's in 1772. Never before had a mind come to a more majestic halt. These are just like a series of aphorisms. Everything else was, you know, unrelated and wonderful. I have seen that this one is actually related. I have seen that fervent ambition and mistrustfulness always go together.
How interesting is that? Placed side by side with what you said about the influence of Buddhism in your life, that it created a greater sense of trust.
I know, it's really weird. That the one about mistrustfulness and ambition was a few years prior to that in Notebook B. Then the Majestic Halt was in Notebook C. But what a observation. I think that when I first got here, I really did come to a halt of a sort that was like, it just completely changed my face, my body, my breath, my everything. Like something really shifted. And now I'm just kind of living into that truth of slowness. Still not easy. I work from home. I have some appointments out and about, but mostly home, and I still have trouble slowing down.
Mm.
So funny.
What is this story? I mean, I think for so many of us, this story sounds like I'm going to miss something. I'll forget something important. What is the urgency message sound like for you?
It's more like to make sure that I found in the last meditation period that I did the desire to be seen and to get attention is so strong in me. And really working my way out of that kind of, you know, I don't want to say I feel ashamed about it. It's very human. But it's not doing anyone any good for me to be grasping for that sort of thing. So do my work. Stop doing my work at 5 o'clock. Go to sleep. Rest. Walk. You know, I'm still, New York still runs and pumps in my veins.
It's an unlearning, I imagine. Interesting too that you bring that up, because I journaled on that very thing this morning, because I posted yesterday a picture of my grandmother at 90 dancing after a 5K she had won. And someone said, in a very well-meaning way, their perception of it, they said, I always loved watching Rosie dance because she danced like no one was watching. And I was like, oh no, actually you missed the whole point. Mm. She danced because everyone was watching. And she had grown up with a lot of disdain for attention. And she was somebody who spent her life in the background supporting others. And yet, as she aged and she came back to her childlike self and lost all of her filters, there was nothing more exciting to her than getting everyone worked up into a titter because she was going low on the dance floor at 90. And I was like, it just really kind of like wrestled with my ideas of attention.
The story. And there's so many layers in there and so many stories that we'll never know. Mine has to do with my sister being born and not being well. And so when I was 18 months old, everything moved. All the energy shifted in my house. Yeah. You know, stuff like that really changes things mm-hmm. for kids. And then that becomes this sort of unconscious motivation for everything. And that's what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. To know that you have space and you are seen. And that acute need for your little girl self has been met. Yeah. And that now you can create space for something new.
That's what it seems like.
And I am really grateful that you distinguished it from shame, that feeling.
Yeah, shame doesn't do anybody any good.
Nah. Especially when it's something you were trying to take care of for your little girl self. That would just be mean to feel shame about that.
I mean, if any of us, if all of us would just stop with the whole shame and guilt thing and just get to the heart of the matter, which is love, looking for love.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a different world.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. We'd certainly discover we are a lot more alike than we are different.
We are a lot more alike, actually.
So I need to know everything about how to hold less. What do you teach in this?
More telling stories of what matters to me, what has changed my ways of seeing and being, and kind of walking you through something very personal, inviting you in, and then putting an inquiry on you. What does this mean for you? How do you relate to this? And how would you change things as a result of this understanding about yourself?
Mm.
That's what's interesting to me. I think we don't spend time kind of sharing our personal stories. And that was my intent here. And since you have kids, I would love to know if you would like to know your stable inner atmosphere. This one is called Seeing with Compassion or Open into Listening.
Mm.
You tell me.
Seeing with compassion feels so right for this world right now.
Okay, cool.
It feels urgent.
It is urgent. It is urgent. So seeing with compassion is a section about making the primary priority to see ourselves with empathy. We're not really trained in how to do this unless we've engaged in some kind of nonviolent communication learning. And nonviolent communication has been such a game changer in my household. I can't tell you.
Okay, yeah. We're going to talk about that next.
Yeah. I studied with Judith Lasseter, and this whole piece, this whole section, and each section is short. It's, you know, maybe a page or two. It's about how when I would drive him to school, I would take his behavior, whether he was ignoring me or being obnoxious, personally. With nonviolent communication, I've learned how to give empathy to myself so that I don't need him to take care of my state.
Mm.
And then he becomes more kind to me as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. Like beautiful.
Fewer plates for him to juggle.
Totally. Totally. I'm taking care of myself. He doesn't need to do that. This is a section of this module here. NVC practice teaches me how to acknowledge my humanity. I'm learning to observe my discomfort and offer myself empathy. Pairing this with my nascent experiences and sitting zazen helps, that's just meditation, helps me to identify new peaceful pathways in the presence of swirling emotions. I can make an observation, determine what I'm feeling, ascertain what need isn't being met, and offer myself empathy. That's all the kid needs. Like the kid doesn't need me to foist my pain onto him or my insecurity. He just needs me to like be a solid, steady presence in the car, whether he's having a great mood or a really shitty one. So that section is really cool.
And you are the kid.
Yeah.
Because you need that too, that honoring.
That's right.
Yeah.
I stopped needing to be somehow like in perfect connection on this car ride today. And I'm just driving him to school.
Yeah.
This was back when he was like 13. Yeah.
It's the expectation.
Totally. It's a nice section for folks who have never explored NVC because it's very super simple and short. And it changes the way things look and feel around, particularly with the people closest to you. And I felt like
I have used NVC with my clients, and we've never talked about it on this podcast. So can you explain just the basic question structure for folks as an introduction?
Yeah. So Judith Hansen Lassner is my teacher of NVC, and her primary and first priority is learning how to give empathy to ourselves, which is really sweet. Mm-hmm. Four steps to that. I just went over that loosely, but observation, when I noticed that you were being silent, whatever, it's an observation. It's not like a judgment. The car was green. The light turned red. Facts. Snapshot. Picture. Mm-hmm. When that happened, I felt, and then listing maybe 3 to 5 feelings, sad, frustrated, I don't know, hurt. And then needs, third step, my needs for connection, respect, safety, love were not met. And before we get into any communication with another human at all, it's how human of me to feel this way. And the whole thing happens internally. Not something I'm saying out loud. And suddenly, what I thought I needed from somebody else, see me, acknowledge me, feel bad for me, becomes something I can give to myself. And it's such a quiet that comes over me when I can do this. So there's that. When it involves another person, so let's say, for example, if I was going to talk to Jonah about something egregious that maybe he said, car.
And Jonah's your son, right?
Yes. Yeah. What has happened? Back when he was 13 or 14, I would say, hey, Jonah, when you said those words, I felt sad, frustrated, and kind of lonely. My need for kindness and respect and mutuality, those needs weren't met. And my request is that the next time you're feeling this way, that you either say nothing or let me know that you're feeling this way so that I can just not speak and let you have your These exact words have been said several times. And now he is so respectful and totally gets it. If he's having a rough time, he'll be like, Mom, I'm just having a rough time. It's better we don't talk. That's cool. Totally cool.
Yeah. I think so often the tension with kids is that we want them to talk when we want them to talk and to not talk when we want them to not talk. And the desire for control is at odds with their desire for agency and their need in the moment. And so, yeah, I think the other thing that's happening there is you are creating a relationship of mutual respect because it is between two humans, not between a robot parent.
Yep.
And a growing tree, right? It's between two human beings who have needs and feelings.
Beautiful. The growing tree.
Right? Because it's like, there is this sort of like, we imbue them with all this like natural animalistic quality. And then we're just like, we are robots. We must be perfect. We must never make mistakes.
It's like, no.
No. We're just a bunch of humans.
Real person with a heart here.
Yeah. And needs.
And needs.
Yeah.
And I think the magic of NVC is about that feelings and needs list. We don't realize what feelings we're having, and we certainly don't register cognitively needs that we have, particularly people closest to us. So to have those lists, I mean, my partner James resisting as he did for at least a year, finally printed up the needs and feelings lists. And now when we have any sort of dialogue that feels sticky, he pulls out that damn little laminated folder. My needs for this and this and this were not met, and I can like communicate with him and understand him. We had such different childhoods. So I don't know what he needs, actually. And I can't assume that his needs and mine would even remotely coincide.
I love that. Yeah, my husband and I, we grew up listening to such different music. It's like, I mean, even though we're basically the same age, you would never know it because we were in such different musical worlds. And our childhoods are very different. And so, of course, I don't know his musical references any more than I know his expectations of family. And so I've learned a lot about his musical taste.
It's
And his idea of family and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So how else have you found it effective to carry less? I think it sounds like nonviolent communication is a big piece of it.
It's a big piece of carrying less, sort of fewer grudges, less rancor, anxiety.
Such a good word. Rancor.
Fewer sort of debts. Mm. And by that, I mean people owing me something. That's something I've let go a lot of. Nobody owes me anything. And there are some stories of my mom and my grandmother and the stories that we sort of take for granted, that they're actually really deep, rich stories in our lives. We forget that that happened.
Mm.
And it really changed us. And we don't write it down because we think, well, it was so sad. And then writing it down for me in writing this book, and there are more memoirs coming. Deep, deep wells are starting to emerge in my consciousness. Mm. I'm starting to write some things down that are pretty wild. And these things are ways to retroactively, I feel, process difficulty without steeping ourselves in it, but in fact, surrender kind of the healing of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this book has shown me. It's like, it's kind of dipping my toe into a few of these healings that I really needed. There are deeper ones to come. I know this. I know it to be true.
I love that answer because it reminds me that, well, every person will not write a memoir.
No.
We all benefit. I mean, everybody could write a memoir, and I've heard it said that everyone should write a memoir at some point, even if no one else reads it. But we all have stories and we all carry them. And so I think what you're saying is the act of sharing them, even with just a piece of paper, acknowledges them. And it's almost the same process as nonviolent communication, in that it brings it out into the light and it says, oh, look. You had so many feelings and needs. I love you. I understand. I feel such compassion for you. Now I can stop judging you and move on.
You're just a human being.
Yeah, you're just a human humaning.
Beautiful.
And so you did not set out to write a memoir. You thought you'd write a prompt journal?
No. I very, what's the word?
Persistent?
I don't want to put myself down, but it was pretty brazen for me to think that I could write a book on the aspects of Zen that have touched my heart deeply at 5 years in. I'm like, no, you can't do that.
Just a Zen baby.
It was earnest. My editor was like, no, technically we would like to have your book out now, but this is not the book we're looking for, so you have to start over. And that's what gave rise to what this is now.
The thing only you could write.
Yeah. And actually, the truth is, it was similar to the collection of poetry, which I still love and believe in. None of these sections were done until there was a little tear forming in the corner of my eye. You know, then it was done.
Mm-hmm.
Not easy. It took literally twice as long to get this book out as it would have.
And so when you talk about that tear, you mean that you had moved beyond the comfortable truth into the truthier truth.
The truth. Yeah, the truth. The truth, the truth. That's really funny. I've never heard that before.
So of the stories you told, which was the scariest? And how do you feel now having told it?
Well, the rewrite was pretty scary to write down, if I'm honest. Sobriety was pretty wild, writing that one down. There was one in the fourth chapter, Taking Action, Waves of Listening. There was a piece about my partner, James, and his childhood, how he grew up in New York in an apartment building on the Upper West Side. And Christmas evening, he and his sister would go down to the trash room and basically garbage pick the toys that the wealthier kids had thrown out so that they could replace them with their new toys. And he is now writing a memoir too, because there are so many stories in this human and they're so harrowing, some of them. That one was painful to write down. There was a beautiful section about the evolving definition of family.
Mm.
a little painful. Like, I'm just slightly afraid for my family to read it. Mm-hmm. I hope they don't mind. But I was sitting around the dining room table as a kid. They would say they loved each other, and then they would just treat each other like garbage. Mm. I was just like, what fresh hell is this? I got to go to my room. This is not making any cognitive sense at all. There was all dissonance. Mm-hmm. And I had to compartmentalize a lot.
What was it like to get those stories out of you?
It was weird and important. I felt them weird and important.
Yeah.
I have to start somewhere. And that was as good a place to start as any. Mm-hmm. And everything is anonymized and, you know, nobody is denigrated in any way. It was just facts. Like, this is how it was going. Mm-hmm. And this is what I felt. And this is how I coped with it. And I know that it's universal because everyone I know who's read the book is like, oh my God. Yeah, that. That part where this one thing was said and these other things were done. And of course we're very good liars. Mm-hmm. Of mm-hmm. course we have all this cognitive dissonance in our bodies. Of course we have weird little T traumas. And some big ones, because we were taught to say one thing, do another thing, and pretend it was this other way.
Right. All of us.
Most of us. Not all, yeah. But.
Yeah, you're right. Most of us. I think we all had it modeled from somewhere, whether it was a teacher or a parent or a friend. I think certainly the degrees to which we saw it modeled may vary, but. It is such a common practice in this world that actually the radical one is this idea that somebody could be consistent.
Yeah, it's really weird. And it's hard. It was hard. I mean, these were basically kids in their 20s and 30s in the 70s raising children.
Yeah. Trying their best.
Doing their best. Everybody's doing their best here.
So you are 55, I think.
Yep, just.
Double nickels, as they say. So, what are your hopes and dreams for the next few decades, my friend?
It's a funny question. I really just hope to keep on writing and keep on taking other things off my plate. It's not an easy puzzle, but I'm working it out slowly.
I wrote a piece for Substack recently that I've talked about more than I talk about most of my pieces because I feel like it keeps coming up in conversation. And I called it SOG as my KPI. And it was an acknowledgement that I really am consciously and subconsciously judging the quality of my life by how much time I'm spending in my space of genius and how much time I'm spending in bullshit that doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good.
So if SOG is my space of genius, the KPI is like, consistently raising that number. And I kind of hear that in what you're saying. It's like in this space of creation is your space of genius.
Totally.
Expression, channeling.
Yes. And there are points where I just got a whole bunch of these little tiny totes for my daily ceremony decks. There's a third edition coming. The totes came and now I feel like so much fun. I'm going to take pictures for the website. And then suddenly it dawns on me, oh yeah, I'm going to be doing a lot of shipping.
Oh yeah, that doesn't sound fun.
Right. So I have some friends who are kids who I think will do that for me. But you know, this is exactly what you're saying, moving from moving into the space of genius and out of the busy.
Mm-hmm. And I think so often we do that stuff because we're like, oh, it will be too hard to offload it to someone else, or it will be too costly. And ultimately, I think it's more costly on all fronts to do this stuff.
That's right.
Age.
That's right.
So every woman on the Uplifters podcast nominates another woman who inspires us. Who would you like to nominate, Elena?
Ali Bogard. She's a really good friend of mine. One of my best. One of the first ones I would reach out to. She's a yoga teacher, but much more than that. Her most recent body of work has to do with regulating the nervous system via both physical practices and meditative practices. Mm. Extremely capable. and allybogard.com. Just an incredible human and definitely an uplifter in my life. Mm-hmm. So yeah, nominate her.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to her.
She's cool.
We also, as uplifters, to your point, love to uplift other uplifters. So how can we support you getting your work into the world right now, Elena? Goodness knows we could all stand to hold less.
Yeah, it's all I know is this is the only work I've got. I just have to stop adding things to the plate and keep taking them off. And keep the people around me who encourage me to do that, not the ones who want me to do more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's becoming a bit of a filter there.
It's a bit of a filter, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was really great to see you.
Oh, so much love.
Thank you for being here with us today.
Yeah, I really appreciate the time. And thank you for sharing the book.
Absolutely.
Am I going to see you? Where are you located now?
I'm in New York still-ish.
On November 20th, I'll be at the Strand with Young Pueblo.
Oh, lovely. Yes. Yes, I will definitely be there.
If you go to my site,
okay,
you'll see the tour dates there. And I would do get that ticket quickly because I know that a lot of people just went on to do it and I'm concerned that they might sell out.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, I'll go look at that right now and we'll be sure to share the tour schedule in the show notes so that other folks can find you. And go read this book and then we'll all talk to each other about it.
Amazing.
I'm really excited to explore the prompts in there. And I think I, like so many of the folks who listen, I get to spend my days supporting others and holding space for them. And so books like yours are just a real invitation for me to take care of myself and to feel held by other people's words and stories. So I look forward to carving that out.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifters podcast. If you're getting a boost from these episodes, please share them with the uplifters in your life and then join us in conversation over at theuplifterspodcast.com. Head over to Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast and like, follow, and rate our show. It'll really help us connect with more uplifters and it'll ensure you never miss one of these beautiful stories. Mwah! Big love.
Painted water sunshine with rosemary and thyme. Dwelling up perplexing, though you find it vexing. Toss a star and hover, be your own best lover. Relish in a new prime, plant a tree in springtime. Dance with idle hindsight, bring the sun to twilight. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa, lift you up, whoa, lift you up, whoa, lift you up.
In the pre-chorus, right?
Uh-huh. I was like,
"Mommy, stop crying! Mommy, stop crying! You're disturbing the peace."